Welcome to Trending in Education. Mike Palmer here. Today, I'm joined by a couple of people from Benefits Data Trust, BDT. I'm joined today by Erica Blumenthal, who's the COO, the Chief Operating Officer at BDT, and Daniel O'Donnell, who's the Associate Director of Higher Education. Welcome to Trending in Education.
Thanks for having us. We are thrilled to be here.
Thank you for having us, Michael.
Erica and I go way back. For our listeners, you're going to have to catch up more, but Erica and I worked together at Kaplan Test Prep for many years. It's always fun to get people back from the Kaplan years. And then Daniel, it's great to meet you and have you on the show. Whenever we have guests on, we always like to start by hearing their origin stories, their hero's tale, if you will, of their professional experience. Let's start with you, Erica, and then follow up with yours, Daniel.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having us on. You know, I started my career actually in the higher education space. I taught for Rutgers University for a number of years in New Jersey. And then I came to Kaplan, working many years with you, Mike, which was really just a fun ride. I was there for over 20 years. And then I left Kaplan during the pandemic. So I've been here at BDT for about 3 years in the chief operating officer role. Mm-hmm. And it's been really great to be able to connect my higher education and education background with the benefits work that we do here at Benefits Data Trust.
Yeah, and we'll get into more about the benefits side and some of the work you're doing. Just to clarify, though, BDT, can you describe quickly what it is?
Yeah, we are a 501c3 nonprofit. We help individuals access the social safety net in the U.S., and we really help states and local governments to improve the administration of benefits in the U.S.
Yep. And then there's an area that's specifically focused on education and higher education, and that's really where you come in, Daniel. Can you catch us up on your story so far in your professional life?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So much like Erica, I started my career in higher education, but on the staff side of things. So I actually worked at my alma mater, Indiana University.
Go Hoosiers.
For about 6 years in various roles. I then went on and did some marketing and for higher education clients at Brain Labs, a global digital marketing agency. And then I stepped into the nonprofit space in my last position at Merit America, which is a nonprofit focused on training low-income individuals. Mm-hmm. And I've been at BDT in my role for about 4 months. And it really speaks to me because I was a low-income first-generation college student, only had the opportunity to go because of a scholarship opportunity in my state that provided free tuition for in-state schools. And I just felt the need to kind of give back and pay that forward in my career. And BDT is a great place to do that.
Yeah, that's a great place to jump off of. Erica, can you kind of just flesh it out a little bit more, kind of connect the dots if folks don't understand the problem space?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the U.S. social safety net is a complex array of various benefits. One of the most common that folks probably have heard of is SNAP or the food benefits. And in addition, in the education space, obviously folks are familiar with Pell Grants and the FAFSA application for those. So those are some examples of benefits. You know, there's lots of folks in the country who really need these benefits, but the processes to apply for them are quite complex. Mm-hmm. So whether you're applying for a SNAP, a food benefit, or if you ever filled out the FAFSA or sat with your child trying to
Right.
So these are very complex.
The FAFSA has become more zeitgeisty, if you will. Folks are talking more about the FAFSA, which is something I think we'll also want to get into a little bit. But we also wanted to talk about the work you're doing to try to reach the population. The real problem here lots of times is that folks just don't know where the benefits are. They don't know what forms or stuff they need to fill out. And then frequently they don't have someone they trust, or maybe they kind of don't know how to get started. That's kind of the space that you're operating in. And then Daniel, like, what kind of work are you doing to reach folks within the education space?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, much like BDT is focused writ large on helping people connect to public benefits, the higher education work at BDT is just more focused on making sure we're helping to connect college students to public benefits. Mm-hmm. And we do that in two ways, really three, but two that I can speak to in depth. The first is making sure that students have a pathway to college. So talking about the FAFSA, of course, we all know this year is confusing and complex for a lot of students due to a lot of changes, but we have a digital FAFSA advisor that's an AI chatbot called Wyatt.
Yes.
That's there to help students complete the FAFSA. So it's mm-hmm. available on SMS or on WebBot or WebChat and helps, you know, answer questions students have about the FAFSA, helps their parents in helping the student, and also provides proactive nudges to help the student complete the FAFSA. And we can talk more about that. The second part is once students are in school, how do we make sure that they have the support they need to actually persist and graduate and, you know, get higher paying wages, life supporting wages after college? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is connecting them to the benefits that Erica talked about, SNAP, WIC, Medicaid, to make sure that they have the food and the healthcare to support themselves while they're in school. Mm-hmm. And we do that through partnership with state agencies and with institutions directly. And then the third pillar is more around policy advocacy. That's more of our policy arm here at BET. But we are actively engaged with state and federal regulators and administrators on, you know, advocating for changes to those systems to make them more equitable and accessible.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I definitely want to dig deeper into Wyatt because you had me at chatbots. But before we get there, I think food insecurity is a topic to maybe go a little bit deeper on, because I think folks may not understand the scope of that and some of the reasons why it's important. I think maybe the pandemic raised some awareness around that, the problem of food insecurity.
Yeah. So, you know, SNAP, as I mentioned, is one of the key federal benefits. One of the unique things I think about benefits is that large benefits like these are federally funded, but they're state administered typically. And so there's a lot of variation and folks don't often either know that they're eligible or they have difficulty, you know, maneuvering through the process. So if we, you know, stay in this student space, we estimate that every year there's probably about 2 million students who are likely eligible who are not applying. And that adds up to about $3 billion left on the table. And, you know, if you've ever been or encountered students in this situation, you know, they're struggling on campuses everywhere. Mm-hmm. And even those on scholarship and who are getting federal aid, right, may pay for tuition or maybe they have some board benefits, but there's lots of, you know, things that those don't cover. And the SNAP benefits and food benefits can really make a difference for students. Daniel can speak to some of the research that we've done on it and the reaction that we've gotten from students, but, you know, helping students to be food secure while they're in school so they can focus on staying in school and graduating is really what we're focused on in the food insecurity space with students.
Yeah. Because I think about it both from their own like physical health, but also just the opportunity cost and the cognitive load for the amount of thinking that has to go on just to figure out where your next meal's coming from while you're still studying and showing up for class and doing all this other stuff. It does really build a meaningful hurdle in there. And then not to mention, you know, finding the benefits if you're first generation, if you're an older student or someone coming back to the educational pathway. Really meaningful space that you're operating in. So why Wyatt? What about the idea of the chatbot? I've likened this to Flippy's Revenge. You know, we're in this phase where we all marginalized and kind of put down Flippy back in the day because he wasn't ready. And now this generation, it's like suddenly we're at this whole new level. What went into Wyatt and why do you think a chatbot is relevant and, like I like to say, zeitgeisty for today's problems?
Yeah, I can jump in there. Wyatt's actually been around for about 5 years. It started with a partnership between BDT and the College Board, specifically to help some of their scholarship populations of students completing the FAFSA as a requirement of their participation in the scholarships. This year was the first year they were offering it free nationally. So any student can sign up and use it. Any counselor can sign up and use it. And we're also offering opportunities to partner with states to actually develop customized engagement plans for their students. And of course, this is a great year to focus on the FAFSA. Great or not great, depending on how you look at it.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, we know that a lot of the changes from the Better FAFSA Act are leading to about a 40% decrease year over year in FAFSA completion compared to this point last year. And we know that, you know, paired with that, students are more likely to engage with you on text message than on email or other platforms. And then also the scalability of AI. So we combine all those things together. Students need support for the FAFSA. We know they're going to use their phones to seek out support and using a new scalable resource like AI to help get the support in front of their hands. Mm-hmm. It just made perfect sense for a tool like Wyatt to be available for students this year.
Yeah, it's good to hear the Wyatt's five too, because I don't know how they age, but it's got to be faster than us. So a five-year-old chatbot's got to be maybe even in adolescence, start to leave the home or something. So like, I imagine Wyatt's got some game by this point. But then the FAFSA example is a really interesting one too, where I think a lot of good intent went into trying to make it better. And then the ability to manage through change is frequently a lot harder, especially around some of these kind of bureaucratic institutional things. Any thoughts on that, Erica?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, any tech transformation is difficult. You know, I think we've seen it in the government spaces, and anybody who's worked for an organization probably has gone through some technical transformations. And so, you know, I think the FAFSA itself is shorter. Folks are saying that it's easier to complete. So, you know, I think the difficulty that we had at launch is not atypical of launches. You know, we saw it back when, you know, healthcare.gov launched.
Right.
It was a little bumpy and wrinkly at first. So I think it's really about recovering from that, just continuing to encourage folks to go and use it and to apply. And the department has been very good about trying to fix issues right away. Mm-hmm. So I think we're getting there to a place where, you know, this is actually a benefit application that is becoming easier, even mm-hmm. though we're in a little bit of a hurdle right now.
Yeah. And that's probably true. Even taking a step back, thinking more broadly about using tools like Wyatt to help smooth over digital transformations. Like, it is something where, you know, we're at whatever generation of chatbots now, and they all got meaningfully upgraded in the last year plus in terms of what everybody can do with this type of stuff. You know, it's almost like at least the customer service will be better. I don't know if they're necessarily going to be able to make it easier to finish the FAFSA, but at least make it a little more palatable, feel like you're kind of understood, and then maybe get kind of micro in your directions where, like, if you're not sure what to do next, that's the type of thing that I imagine a chatbot could be pretty effective at delivering.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we've been learning in managing the chatbot is just sort of the language that students use engaging with it. So they speak to Wyatt the same way they speak in the chat, text, or on Snapchat or wherever they are.
Wyatt is fire.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's right. I just tried it out. I'll just test the material here.
Wyatt is learning along with us all. And we are able to provide it both in a text format. So if students want to text back and forth or directly on a website, if you're sitting there with your FAFSA and you want to have the chat open with you. So really trying to meet students where they are and in a language that they speak.
Yeah, makes sense. And then Pell and just higher ed in general is probably the other angle that is worth making observations on. You know, is there anything y'all are noticing in that space around benefits?
On the FAFSA side of things, I think it's important to recognize there's also an equity issue here as well. And the scalability of a chatbot is really helpful in that regard. We know that there's a decrease in FAFSA submission that's correlated to percentage increases in poverty and free and reduced lunches in school districts, compounded by probably have less counselor to student ratios in those districts. So having a tool that's available 24/7, you can use it, you know, 8 o'clock at night when you're sitting down with your parents to look at the FAFSA form, not in your high school guidance counselor's office, can be very helpful for those, you know, lower income, first generation, historically excluded groups that may be navigating a lot of this for the first time.
Yeah.
And second to that, with all the changes that happened this year, it's also very helpful for even returning students navigating the shifts away from, you know, how you defined a contributor or a parent in the past versus, you know, expected family contribution and SAI and what that means for them today and translating that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, you mentioned around the lack of awareness. There's some data out there from the National College Attainment Network that just in 2023 alone, there was about $4 billion in Pell Grants left on the table.
Wow.
So, you know, Erica lifted that $80 billion a year in federal benefits go untapped. $4 billion of that is funding that students are not leveraging to go to college.
Wow.
And then, of course, we talked about food insecurity as well. You pair that with the $3 billion of SNAP benefits, and there's $7 billion of federal money available to get students into college and help them succeed while they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to work with state agencies, institutions. That's our main audience, to get more awareness in front of students so that they know they're eligible for these benefits and that they know how to apply for them, how to stay enrolled in them.
Yeah, makes sense. And then what about the disruption that we're seeing in higher ed, where like a lot of the pathways are now shifting to other ways to get your skills and job readiness identified, ways that are faster, perhaps more targeted, apprenticeships or even paid? In those cases, you know, those populations still might benefit from these benefits. How is BDT, how are you thinking about, you know, focusing on this audience, how the educational pathways that they're choosing might be changing?
The number one thing to think about is that unfortunately, the FAFSA is not available to a lot of those populations in the short-term programs. There is some legislation making its way through the House and the Senate right now that might change that. Mm-hmm. So we're not as like focused on getting the FAFSA and Wyatt in the hands of the populations yet, but we're prepared to do so. Mm-hmm. However, I think there's, you know, back to the equity play, a lot of the reason some of those individuals don't have the opportunity to go to a traditional 2-year or 4-year campus is because they have, you know, family obligations. They have to continue working full time. And so they have to seek out other opportunities, which means they are probably more in need of the other public benefits, the SNAP, the WIC, the Medicaid, as they take time away from work to do the training.
Right.
And we are focused on how we can engage with more of these workforce oriented organizations. In fact, we just kicked off a pilot with Prescalis, which is a national nonprofit training provider, in specifically piloting in New York City and the state of Texas, and how we can help them better understand the benefits process and also provide some enrollment solutions and assistance in our New York City call center.
Right.
And we're hoping to expand this with Prescalis and other organizations, workforce development boards, leveraging other federal funding like LEOA and Perkins to figure out how we can engage with those populations and connect them just as much as you are more quote unquote traditional higher education students.
And I'll pile on a little bit. I think, you know, in the more traditional space on college campuses, you know, there's still that need to inform students about benefits once they're there. And so Daniel actually has some details from a Northwest study that we recently completed with two community colleges of Pennsylvania. And out of that, we really put together a set of recommendations about what schools can do to just let their students know that, hey, these benefits are available and how to access them. We're finding that most students are pretty tech savvy, not surprisingly, and are often able to navigate state benefit websites and those sorts of things. So it's really for colleges, it's just about getting the word out. How can you let your students know the resources about that?
I can add some color to that report she was talking about and some of the data behind it. So like she said, we partnered with Ed Northwest to kind of evaluate some of the work we did with two Pennsylvania community colleges. And we found some pretty striking things. You know, fewer than half of the students that we surveyed indicated that they knew how to apply for SNAP. We focused on SNAP in particular. And fewer than that, only about 36% even knew that they were eligible as a student. So there's a large awareness issue happening here. And we heard from the students that they would like to hear from their colleges just more increased visibility around SNAP through different marketing approaches. So, you know, targeted outreach to those who may be eligible, which we've developed a toolkit here at BDT to help colleges do that.
Yeah.
And more one-on-one assistance for low-income students. So we know that there's a need among the students. As they become more aware of their accessibility to these benefits, they are wanting more from their institutions on helping to connect them.
Yeah. I got a free pitch for you. Got SNAP? There you go. That was free. That was free. That's, you know, just that's how I roll.
But
it's a little catchy, but it is interesting.
It's
also
snappy, you might say.
Oh, there you go.
I love it.
Well done. And then what about the challenge of stigmatizing folks and the idea that people who are receiving public benefits are looked down upon? I imagine that there is an element of that that you're navigating. How do you think about that space and how do we start addressing some of those challenges?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of data out there that shows that students, yes, there is some stigmatization around enrolling in these public benefits, but it never ranks anywhere near the top as a reason as why they're not enrolling. It's more around the awareness and not knowing how to navigate the enrollment process, the application process, and frankly, time. There's a lot of administrative burdens that are placed specifically on students wanting to enroll in SNAP. Mm-hmm. So not only do they have to meet the traditional eligibility requirements from the USDA or their state, they also have to meet a student exemption if they're enrolled more than half time at their institution. Mm-hmm. And some of those exemptions are, you know, working 20 hours a week or more, which we know that if they're hungry and they're working 20 hours a week, how are they focusing on their studies? Or being enrolled in particular federally funded programs. So one of those advocacy pieces that we're working on is, you know, encouraging the USDA and the Farm Bill reauthorization in Congress to remove some of those barriers. Number one being the interview that students are required to go through in their renewal.
And it's got to be, if I'm hearing you right, it's got to be different state to state and university to university, which adds to the complexity. It's also a place where AI and technology can actually help, where, you know, one customer service rep picking up the phone and having to navigate a countrywide call center would be flummoxed.
It's true. So SNAP is pretty complicated because the rules are different in different states. You know, the funds are federal, but the states are given a lot of leeway in some of the regulations and the application processes that they can put on it. So It's definitely complicated. And so as opposed to the FAFSA, which is complicated in its own way, but it is a single application and there's, you know, not variation.
Yeah. Should get better, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it will get better, but it's a single application. But some of the work that BDT does is really trying to demystify some of those rules. So, you know, we engage with folks in a lot of places around the country to raise awareness. So we run text campaigns or even old-fashioned mail, particularly with an older population. And then at some locations, we do run a contact center, but there's software behind that. Our contact center agents are speaking to people in just normal language and inputting that information into a system that then can spit out whether they're likely eligible for a benefit. So there's lots of different ways to reach people. And again, a lot of it is about just making folks aware. And to go back to your point about the stigma piece, I think some of it is really about how we talk. When we send text messages, for example, we really talk about the SNAP benefit, in particular food benefit, as something that people are entitled to. If they're eligible, they're eligible, and they should take advantage of that. And so, you know, a lot of it has to do with language and how we think about it and how we talk about it. And we do, we reach out, whether it's a student population or general population or even the senior population. We want to use language that resonates with them so that they understand that they could take advantage of this.
Yeah. And to that point around the language aspect of this from a higher ed perspective, you know, one thing that we're trying to change in our language is, you know, there's the trope of the hungry student or the grad student that has to eat ramen, and like trying to shift the paradigm away from that's just how it is to asking the question, why is it that way? And how can we support them to have nutritious food and have three meals a day while they're in school? That can also help to shift that stigma as well if we approach it in a different way in the higher education space.
That's true. That's a good reminder to me. Eating ramen while you're a freshman is not a badge of honor. I'll stop with that narrative, although I've been using that since college. This is really interesting stuff. I'm talking to Erica Blumenthal and Daniel O'Donnell from BDT. It's bdtrust.org. There's a report that will also include that Daniel referenced in the show notes for today's episode. We're getting closer to time here. I always like to ask where folks are getting their inspiration, what's coming down the pike that perhaps we should be aware of. It's an audience of folks who are trying to get out ahead of what's new and emerging. Anything new and exciting out there? Anything you want to share with us, with our listeners? It doesn't have to be about BDT. It could be about anything. Anything out there in the world capturing your imagination these days?
For me, I think it's about just being on this technological ride, right? So why it is powered by a variety of technologies under the hood, and we're able to really connect people with services and benefits in a new way. And I see that Wyatt and the FAFSA is just being sort of the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. And I really hope that we use technology in even better ways to improve the U.S. social safety net. That's what is getting me excited these days.
I just saw related to that, the LA Unified School District just released Ed, who is a virtual assistant that all the high school students get. And then I've also heard the term PVAs as something that's on the horizon, personal virtual assistant. In that case, it's more like you're training it, kind of like is it like a Tamagotchi? Is that what they're called? Proud Gen Xer here. You know, the idea that you'll be training up your own personal Wyatt and having it be a little more broadly available across different platforms. It's kind of like what an executive assistant has done for folks historically. Can everybody get something like that to help with bookings and forms and filing taxes? You can see it break bed, of course, when I talk this way. But any thoughts on any of this, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned a proud Gen Xer. I'm a proud millennial. Something that's been on my mind a lot lately is I feel like Gen Z gets a lot of negative connotations in the media right now. But I've been reflecting a lot and, you know, engaging with a lot of them in this work. And I think our future is so bright. They are the most well-connected, well-informed, tech savvy. They're growing up in the age of AI. I think we're going to be truly impressed if we can make sure that they are supported in achieving some kind of post-secondary credential. And so completing the FAFSA and making sure they have access to the benefits that they're entitled to while they're in college. And I think that the potential for that generation is unlimited.
And as a proud parent of a five-year-old, don't snooze on, they're calling it Alpha Gen. I'm calling it Gen AI. I think they're Gen AI. Like, they're the generation that's going to grow up with this stuff. But who knows? You know, like, that's why you also have to be, to really both your points, you have to be out there testing with something like Wyatt, because, you know, 10 years from now, where will this be? It'll be built on top of these experiments and this kind of pioneering trial phase that we're in right now. You know, you can ultimately get kind of excited about that, which is one of the reasons why I love talking to folks about this type of work. We're pretty much at time. Maybe closing thoughts from each of you. Thanks again for joining on today's show. But any takeaways, closing thoughts as we wrap up for our listeners?
Well, just thank you so much, Mike, for having us on. Really appreciate it. I encourage folks to check out our website, to read up on some of the materials, check out Wyatt if you have a student who is filling out the dreaded FAFSA. And come along with us on this ride. Daniel?
Yeah, I'll just echo what she said. You know, we're on a mission here at BDT to solve the benefits access issue, and we can't do that alone. So to the higher education professionals out there, you know, the resources we can give you to help you right now, like Erica said, is Wyatt is number one at getfafsahelp.org. And then for all of our college administrators that are thinking about how to get benefits in the hands of students, you can go check out our Benefits Access for Student Success Toolkit on our website at bdtrust.org. And it's a great hands-on resource to help universities identify students and then connect them with benefits. And those are both free resources.
Amazing stuff. Thanks again to Erica and Daniel. To our listeners, thank you for listening. We'll be back again soon. This is Trending in Education.